carries in, scores! Patrick Laine snaps it. What a goal by Laine.
Gotta throw this one in the trash and move on. That's not obviously the way you want to start.
Shooting, it's off of Hellebuck. Rebound, side of the net. Stopped by Hellebuck. Key saves for Connor Hellebuck.
Johnson scores. Sidney Crosby.
As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right.
Stand by highlight. Stand by host. You big boy.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Miles, everyone.
With Drew Mendel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manoop.
And cue the little criminal.
On your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Back down low now for Duclair. Anthony Duclair back toward the line for Jan Ruta. Ruta makes a move. Skinny's down along the boards. Let a shot go. They score. Jan Ruta on the short side beats Hellebuck. And it's 2-0 Chicago.
That second period goal by Jan Ruta proved to be the game winner as the Blackhawks defeat the hometown Winnipeg Jets by a 2-1 margin last night in the Windy City. Not a good goal, to put it mildly, one that Connor Hellebuck definitely wanted back, and it proved to be the game winner as the Jets peppered Jeff Glass in the third period, looking to equalize. They came as close as one goal away, but ultimately dropped the 2-1 decision in Chicago. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning via the iHeartRadio app and at TSN1290.ca, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We're all over your Winnipeg Jets, as you might expect. We'll touch on the announcement, more than touch on, we'll talk about the announcement of Team Canada for the upcoming 2018 Winter Olympics. The men's hockey team announced earlier this week on Thursday. We'll talk about that much more throughout the 3 hours of the broadcast. I'm your host, Drew Mendel, joined in studio by Dave Manoop and Ezra Ginsberg. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. You can also reach us via Twitter at Illegal Curve. If we like what you tweet, if we like what you text, we might read it on air. That's just the kind of guys we are. Our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news, that's IllegalCurve.com. Without further ado, I say good morning to the two men who make up this fine triumvirate with me, Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manoop. Gentlemen, good to see you both on this bitterly cold Saturday morning.
Yeah, it's still cold, and I think it's probably still going to be cold for another couple months here, but what a performance by Jeff Glass yesterday. Yeah.
2005 and all over again.
Absolutely. He was great back in 2005. And, you know, he's having a pretty good year in the American Hockey League for the Rockford IceHogs, except when they played the Manitoba Moose. The Manitoba Moose absolutely lit him up earlier this season, Dave. But yesterday, you know, he makes an unbelievably huge save on Patrick Laine, makes a save earlier on Kyle Connor on the breakaway, made another save on Matthew Perreault. So, you know, it wasn't for lack of scoring chances that the Jets lost that game last night. For me, it was just Jeff Glass was excellent in net. And sure, you know, the Blackhawks, you know, got some opportunistic goals, but for me, that was the big story. You know, that's your third-string goaltender. We thought Forsberg was going to go in net.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Jeff Glass gets the start, and, you know, they pick up that 2-1 win.
Yeah, I thought they should have called Coach Vincent and maybe J.C. LaPonne, who had a hat-trick that game against Jeff Glass and the Rockford IceHogs. They beat them 8-1 on 36 shots, and Jeff Glass was in net for all 8 goals against. So that was probably his worst performance of the AHL season, and his one of his best NHL performances in his limited number was last night. I mean, he was sensational when he needed to be, and you know, the Patrick Laine goal that beat him is, again, that's just Patrick Laine being Patrick Laine. And again, he got lucky also. There were a couple of bounces. Blake Wheeler hit the post towards the end of the game. So he definitely got some fortuitous bounces against. But at the same time, you know, he was good when he needed to be, kept his team in it. And, you know, it was one of those, it's kind of become the opposite of last season, where Chicago seems to have Winnipeg's number as mm-hmm. opposed to Winnipeg having Chicago's number.
And Dave, for those who don't know you know, who we're talking about here. You know, Jeff Glass, 2005, that was the World Junior Hockey Championships.
In Grand Forks.
In Grand Forks. Yeah. The backup, of course, was Réjean Beauchemin, if you remember.
I don't remember that, but I'm glad
from Manitoba.
You do. Yes. Yeah. That was the best world. That was the best Team Canada in the World Juniors ever, because,
yes,
of course, that was the lockout year in the NHL.
Yeah, you're talking about Crosby, Getzlaff, Bergeron, Phaneuf,
yeah,
Jeff Carter, Corey Perry.
The future Team Canada at the Olympics.
Yes.
That's basically what it was. They dominated that tournament. And Jeff Glass, who albeit wasn't busy in that tournament for the most part, but he was the Team Canada's goaltender, and that was really sort of his last great hurrah, as he's been a journeyman goaltender since then, playing overseas in Europe, playing in the AHL, and he just got his first opportunity to get an NHL action about, what is it, 5 or 6 games ago when he played against the Edmonton Oilers and got his first victory.
Andrew Ladd was on that team. Yeah. Brent Seabrook, who the Jets just saw last night, was on that team. I agree with you. That was the best World Junior team ever.
Yeah. All it took was the NHL going dark for an entire season, but I guess that's a separate issue altogether. But anyways, yesterday, the Jets, you know, I thought that, I mean, the speed that was on display during the game I thought was quite impressive. Both teams are fast, and you got to see that throughout the entirety of the 60 minutes. You know, like you said, the Jets had their opportunities. You know, Matthew Perreault had that great sort of quick breakaway on the pass from Brian Little. Kyle Connor, you know, had that 3-on-1 opportunity where nothing came of it, because Kyle Connor sort of, I don't know if he mishandled it, but maybe he overthought it, and Jordan Oesterle broke it up for the Blackhawks. So the Jets had some opportunities, and then they really started to come along late in the third period after Patrick Laine got to the Jets to within one. Here is, you know, Patrick Laine talking post-game. Rory, you got it ready to go, brother? Okay, Rory gives me the thumbs up. Here's Patrick Laine post-game talking about his goal and talking about the one-timer late in the game where the Jets got oh so close to tying it.
And your last one-timer, Patrick, his team made a good save? Or?
Yeah, he made a good save. I should have scored, but I couldn't get it high enough, and that's it.
On your goal, did you shoot for that spot after the one right before you got through and hit the post?
Yeah, I just wanted to shoot far side, and now we went in, so it was a huge goal, but it doesn't matter anymore.
Patrick Laine's goal, I mean, it came in a losing effort, but the goal he scored to bring the Jets to within one, an unassisted, I mean, You can't describe it as a wrist shot, but that's what it was. But it was a bullet. It was a bullet. It was an
A plus shot.
Yeah.
And you know, he hits the post earlier, Dave, or I don't know if it was the post or the crossbar. It hit the iron, and you know, then you know, he has the chance to tie it late. Yeah. Jeff Glass makes an absolutely phenomenal post to post save, pad save. You know, so if you think about it, Laine could have easily had a hat trick. I thought that was Laine's maybe his best game of the last couple of weeks, and mm-hmm. he's been really good over this last stretch. The Jets entering the game 6-0-1 in their last 7, so he was really good. But I love the fact that, you know, he says, you know, that goal didn't really matter, because you know that, you know, Laine wants to win games, and you know, he scores his 20th goal of the game, but Dave, he'd rather have the win than his 20th.
Yeah, absolutely, and you can hear it in his voice. Like, and you know, even after the game, when he was talking about the break and how they've had enough rest, and he just doesn't want the 5 days. Like, not, you know, I'm sure there's not many players on the Jets, especially some of the guys who are a little more banged up than Patrick Laine right now, who are probably excited, especially the older players are excited. But it just goes to show you his competitive nature, that he doesn't want to be like resting for 5 days or going on holidays for 5 days, especially because, you know, the Jets, even despite the fact that they're missing Mark Scheifele, have been hot since he's gone down with injury. So, you know, they don't really want to. The Central still remains very tight, and I think he wants to continue to build on what they've been doing. So you can just hear it in his voice, and that happens every time. You know, he loves to score. There's no diminishing that fact. You know, the kid relishes the opportunity. But really, truly, and whether it's I really don't think it's false. I think he really has bought into this overall team winning effort. And so he knows that in a losing effort, despite the fact that he scored his 20th goal and could have had, as he just said, his 21st and 22nd goals of the season, he's not happy because the team lost, and that's really what matters at the end of the day.
You mentioned Mark Scheifele, Dave, and I thought this was the first game since Scheifele's injury that the Jets looked like they missed him more than all the other games. I thought the center ice play was a bit lacking. No disrespect to Wheeler and to Little, but when you're without Scheifele and you're without Adam Lowry in your lineup, the Jets were were thin up the middle last night, and I thought for the first time since Scheifele's been out, and then as well since Lowry suffered his injury, the Jets struggled a little bit up the middle, and in general with their sort of offensive game. They weren't as sharp last night as we'd seen them been since the injuries first happened.
Well, you know, you mentioned earlier, Drew, you know, Kyle Connor, when he was on that 3-on-1, kind of overplayed the puck. I thought you saw a lot of that later in the game in the second and third periods. I thought the Jets were maybe being a little too fancy at times. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I thought Blake Wheeler and Brian Little were fine last night. And, you know, I thought the line of Jonathan Toews, Brandon Saad, and Vinny Hinostroza was really good. That's the Blackhawks' top line. And if you think about it, the Hawks' best line was the third line. Mm-hmm. And that's the line of Anthony Duclair, David Kampf, and Alex DeBrincat. Alex DeBrincat is a guy, you know, he's been in the Calder conversation, but kind of on the outside of the Calder conversation with guys like, you know, Brock Besser and Matthew Barzal and Charlie McAvoy, maybe getting some more attention. But DeBrincat's put together a really nice rookie season. We've talked to Mark Lazarus about this. I mean, he's a guy that they weren't even sure if he was going to make the Blackhawks this year. They thought maybe he'd start the year in the American Hockey League, but he's been really good. So, I mean, the Hawks guys, even though, you know, this team is kind of, you know, teetering on the edge of a playoff spot right now, I think they're in the second wild card spot.
Yeah.
This is still a very good team. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, Jordan Oesterle, you know, he's a guy that...
He played well last night. He impressed me.
He's a good skater. Yeah. And, you know, he's looked good on that top pair with Duncan Keith. But as far as I'm concerned, they still need to add a top four defenseman. But no doubt, I mean, I think when you're talking about Scheifele, Drew, anytime you've got Scheifele in the lineup, possibly to match up against Jonathan Toews, I mean, you know, you would be better for it. But I thought Wheeler was pretty good yesterday. I think, you know, it was that second period really that hurt the Jets, and they just didn't generate enough offense. But as we talked about, they could have easily tied this game and got at least 1 point and, you know, taking it to overtime.
Yeah, Wheeler, of course, hitting the post as the, you know, within under 30 seconds to play when he takes that shot from sort of just inside the right point there. And they did get close, but you know, they talked about a post game, Dave, that they thought they were too cute for the majority of the game. They didn't get pucks deep and go and get them. They were trying to, you know, dangle through the entire team, the entire Blackhawks team at the blue line, and the Blackhawks are just too good with their sticks, and that's what Paul Maurice referenced as well. They're just too good with their sticks to play in that manner. This was a game where you had to get the puck in deep, go chase it, and use your physicality against the Blackhawks.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right, Drew. And I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers, who usually is a wizard with the puck, was probably guilty of that a few times throughout the game, where he would try and dangle throughout the team, bring it in, do a lot of things, as opposed to getting it in deep and kind of allowing the forecheck to retrieve the puck and then, you know, cause a little confusion and mayhem with the Hawks. So really, the Hawks knew what to do. They just set up against on the line and then really just prevent. It was like a prevent defense, and they just essentially, you know, didn't allow Nikolaj Ehlers to get established, to kind of allow the Jets to get established in the Hawks zone, and that really prevented the Jets from getting things started. And Blake Wheeler, you could hear the frustration in his voice, because he basically said that was, we weren't willing to do those things that we needed to do to win the game.
And Dave, you know, going back to what I was saying before, I think overall, if you're the Jets, not just the, you know, the players, but the coaching staff, you're pretty happy with the way they played on the road there, you know, after having some days off. And you know that you don't have that much time to dwell on it, because you've got Minnesota coming up tonight. So, you know, for me, it's not that disappointing of a loss, because you would, you know, gone 6-0-1 in your last seven.
It's a loss you could afford.
And I don't, exactly. And I don't care what anybody says. The Chicago team is still very good. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, they're one or two players away from, you know, potentially going on a playoff run. I would never count them out, especially when you have Corey Crawford back in net.
Well, once he's back healthy, which of course will be like a trade deadline acquisition for the Blackhawks. Speaking about the trade deadline, we're about 6 or 7 weeks away from that. We'll look at the Winnipeg Jets as we sit here on January the 13th. What might they be in the market for as it pertains to a trade deadline acquisition? That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. NHL trade deadline coming up before you know it, towards the end of February, about 6-7 weeks away. The Jets clearly in a buying mode, I think most people would say, given their place in the Western Conference standings, given their place in the league standings. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Winnipeg Jets, last time that a trade deadline came about and they were in a playoff spot, they bought a couple guys. That was when they acquired, of course, Jiří Tolusti from the Carolina Hurricanes. Lee Stempniak came over from the New York Rangers.
Don't forget before that, Jay Harrison.
Jay Harrison, that's when the Jets had all those defensive injuries that season. Jay Harrison came back, came around in, I think, in December, more than the trade deadline, but certainly an acquisition.
Well, I said before.
Yes, you did. You're absolutely right. How do you see the Jets, you know, considering, or how do you see the Jets approaching this trade deadline, even though I know it's only 7 weeks away still, so a long time still, but obviously conversation is ramping up. That's the next big calendar item in the NHL.
I don't see the Jets doing a lot, guys.
And really?
I realize that, you know, a lot of fans are thinking, well, I mean, this team is first place in the Central right now. They're clearly buyers, but, I mean, they just went on a 6-0-1 run. Like, what does this team need to acquire? As far as I'm concerned, the only thing that the Jets might need is maybe a specialty forward or a depth defenseman. Specialty meaning, you know, maybe someone who's good on faceoffs or, you know, a depth winger. But really, they kind of have that in Matt Hendricks, right? So I don't see the Jets doing a lot. And, you know, Mark Scheifele is going to be back in the lineup in what, 3 or 4 weeks?
Somewhere around there.
And, you know, this team is rolling. So do the Jets really have any weaknesses right now? I don't see any.
You wouldn't look for them, Dave, to maybe try and acquire a top nine winger, something like that, just to maybe add another layer of depth? You know, assuming, you know, Wheeler moves back to the wing when Scheifele comes back and you're back to sort of how you were before the injury happened, you don't think that they'd be in the market maybe for a top nine winger, something like that, to supplement what they currently have?
Potentially. I mean, like, I'm kind of on board with what Ez is saying. I think that they're more inclined to add a specialty type player or more of a defensive, like a defenseman that they could add to potentially offset any losses, because that to me is kind of the biggest liability for Winnipeg right now is more of the defensive depth. Because really, if you look at it from a NHL AHL standpoint, if you have any significant situations like they did last year where they ended up, you know, like I said, recalling Nelson Nauge, which nobody anticipated, myself included, that could be the biggest kind of weakness to this team, because realistically, who are you talking about? You're talking about Julian Melchiori.
So you're talking about a ninth defenseman at this point in time?
I'm simply saying that it's a potential if you're asking me for an area, but really, you know, you've got Pullman and you've got Melchiori in the minors. Cam Schilling, of course, as well.
Sherratt in the press box.
Sherratt in the press box. So I'm not suggesting it's a move you have to make. I'm just saying, like, you know, to me, this team has the depth. And with in terms of the guys they can call up, you've got guys, like I said, you've got a Roslovic, you've got Lemieux, you've got players who, you've got Nick Petan. You've got a bunch of players who could kind of come in and fill a role for you. I mean, like, the reality is, we talk about top nine forwards. Well, Jack Roslovic, you know, and we saw it last night in the third period when he was promoted to the third line, is going to get, would be the guy who would get that chance in my mind. And then you've got a guy like a Nick Petan, who again is not going to thrive playing on your fourth line, but potentially could do well the way they're using Roslovic. You know, give him a little power play time and play him on the third line role at least. Then maybe we're talking, you know, a guy like that. But, you know, I mean, in terms of perhaps they're thinking to themselves, well, you know, we're already a little bit light in terms of playoff, you know, experience. So maybe they go out and get a winger who's got a little bit more, you know, playoff experience that has been there before and can provide them with that sort of depth role. But again, like I said, I just don't see the Jets making any significant moves, because I think, and we talk about it with Tyler Myers, sometimes you get players back from injury and it's like making a trade, because you've dealt with the adversity of not having them in the lineup. So you've learned to win without them. Potentially, of course, you could lose without them. But as we're seeing with Mark Scheifele, in this relatively small sample of what now 7 games without Mark Scheifele, or 8 games, sorry, without Mark Scheifele, you're learning to adapt without that player. Now, of course, if you get Mark Scheifele back and he's healthy, and the reality is they're not going to put Mark Scheifele in before he's healthy, so then you're saying to yourself, we've got Mark Scheifele back, that really just augments your forward depth. What are you going to do to really, do you really want to change the chemistry of this team? And again, like I said, lose some pieces that you're going to need, because the question really becomes, is this Jets team going for it this year? And let's be realistic. The Jets team has enough offensive firepower, and they have the goaltending from Connor Hellebuck, and they have the defense. This team could win the Stanley Cup this year. It's not out of the realm of possibility that this could be a Stanley Cup team. But having said that, generally Stanley Cup teams are kind of built through a few years. So you wonder, do they need another year of seasoning, you know, second round, third round this year, and then go for it next year? So it's up in the air in my mind.
And Dave, look who they just put on the fourth line, and then look who was just called up to the third line, Jack Roslovic.
Right.
So why do you need to go outside of the organization?
So Roslovic to you, as he started to interrupt, Roslovic to you could be the trade deadline acquisition.
Absolutely.
For the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, and obviously Scheifele coming back, you know, early February, mid-February will be the, you know, the big trade deadline acquisition, if you want to call it that, or the big addition, you know, coming back from injury. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, why do you need to give up any draft picks or any prospects in the organization when you already have those prospects in the organization, right? And, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff has been criticized for being patient, but look where the Jets are right now.
Are you comfortable with Adam Lowry as your third line center? You know, we just got a tweet from our buddy Frank Zappia, sponsor of the segment as it happens, who said that he thinks the Jets need another center for the playoffs, someone who can sort of fill in that third line center role, which presumably would move Lowry to your fourth line center.
Yeah, and it's a good, you know, point by Frank, but, you know, for me, the Jets are fine up the middle. I really believe that. And, you know, Blake Wheeler has moved over to center in place of Mark Scheifele. But for me, it's more likely, as kind of Dave and I touched on, you know, maybe, you know, the Jets go after a depth defenseman with a little more experience. Like a guy like, I'm just throwing a name out there, like a guy like a Jordy Benn on the left side, kind of like a veteran player like that. I'm not saying Jordy Benn specifically.
Sure, but that
I'm
kind
saying,
of
I'm
ilk.
Saying that type of player, you know, he's on the Habs right now. He's on that second pair. He's been on the third pair. But a player like that, as Dave mentioned, because, you know, if you get a few injuries, look what happened to the Pittsburgh Penguins, right? They got guys like Ron Hainsey and Mark Streit. So I would say there's more of a chance the Jets maybe go after a depth defenseman. I'm not saying that it's out of the question that the Jets go after a third-line center or a third-line winger. But needless to say, Drew, I don't think the Jets are going to make a big move. Like, I don't think the Jets are going to move a first-round pick, even a second- or third-round pick. And why would you guys? Because we know how well the Jets have drafted in the later rounds, right? Look at guys like Sammy Niku, Mason Appleton, Connor Hellebuck. These are all guys that were drafted in the later rounds, right? So I just wouldn't expect the Jets to make tons of moves. Again, I'm not saying that they're not going to make any moves. I just don't think they're going to be major moves.
So you don't think they'd be in the market for a guy like Mike Hoffman, who is rumored to be on the block out of Ottawa, a guy who's a last 3 years, 27 goals, 29 goals, 26.
Who's he replacing in the lineup?
Well,
where does he go in the lineup? He doesn't go in the top six.
No.
Does he even make it on the third line? That third line's a checking line.
Well, but it doesn't have to be a checking line. Your fourth line
could
be.
Paul Maurice has used it as a checking line all year. I don't think that's going to change.
Well, I mean, I personally, obviously it depends on what the price is. But if you can add another, if you can turn your third line from that checking line into a scoring line, that would be something I would do. I mean, if you all of a sudden are rolling out there with Mike Hoffman on your third line, you know, with, I mean, you look at your winger depth, if you add a guy like Mike Hoffman, then you're really talking that you got a top nine of scoring there. Now, it all depends
on I think they already have the depth. I don't think they need Mike Hoffman. And Mike Hoffman is a great player. I mean, he's a top 20 goal scorer in the NHL. I mean,
yeah.
Maybe not so much this year, but in previous years, he's been great. Lots of speed, so he would fit in nicely with the Jets. I just don't think you need him.
Fair enough. The guys on That's Hockey addressed this question earlier. Let's hear what Gino Retta, Darren Dreger, and Mike Johnson had to say about the Jets and the trade deadline.
Winnipeg Jets, listen, they're awesome. They've been having a great season. So I'm going to assume they're going to be buyers at the trade deadline.
Interested in buying, I can tell you that much, but it's going to depend on who's available. I think we can say that on an annual basis, and specific to Winnipeg, they'd like to add something on the wing. In a perfect world, it'd be a player who could push into their top six, but Kevin Cheveldayoff would be okay with, you know, adding a top nine player. What they're going through right now, and it'll continue into their pro scouting meetings next week, is evaluating what they have internally, not just with the Winnipeg Jets at the NHL level, but what they have in the American Hockey League as well. What's precarious about the position, though, of the Winnipeg Jets is how patient they've been to get to this point, how they've done it the right way and, you know, allowing certain players to season or overseason, if you will, you know, in terms of the development strategy. So is it time for Winnipeg to get off their checkbook and find that piece or pieces to put themselves truly, truly in contending status? I think they're a Stanley Cup contender today, but maybe they need a piece or two to push them right up to the top.
It's time. If you have a chance to win a cup, it's time. They've been patient. The fans have been patient. They are being rewarded with great play, and now's the time to pull the trigger. If they have the cap space, they have the assets, go for it, because you never know when you might have this opportunity.
That's right.
You wouldn't think Edmonton would be way out of the playoffs this year. You don't think Ottawa would be way out of the playoffs. You can't just count on every year being good. This is their year. Time to go.
And you heard from Mike Johnson there at the end. I mean, you never know when your window is open or when it's going to close. Edmonton out of the playoffs. Everyone had them as a Stanley Cup favorite this year. It's been another disaster. I mean, you hear Darren Dreger, you hear Mike Johnson. Those guys say the Jets are Stanley Cup contenders. And boy, that's got to, you know, first of all, it's music to the ears of Winnipeg Jets fans, but it's going to make the trade deadline and the lead up to the trade deadline over the next 6-7 weeks all the more interesting here in Winnipeg for a team that's now a buyer as opposed to being a perennial seller like they've been.
Yeah, and you know, going back to what you said before about possibly going after a top six, top nine winger, like a guy like a Mike Hoffman, who it looks like Ottawa is prepared to move, or at least they're going to entertain the idea of moving him. I mean, there's a good chance the Jets could kind of beef up that top nine. But for me, I mean, this team is second in the NHL in goals right now. I mean, is this what the team needs? I don't think they have a shortage of guys that can put the puck in the net. They just scored 7 goals the other night.
Right.
I mean, I just, for me, it's more so addressing, you know, more of a defensive need than an offensive need. We know they're set in goal. Mm-hmm. I mean, their top six defensemen are, you know, at the very least top 10 in the NHL. So for me, I don't know how many moves you actually have to make. But having said that, I mean, if injuries kind of creep up here in the next 6 or 7 weeks, and the Jets think, well, you know, we could add maybe 1 or 2 pieces and really make us, you know, an elite team. Maybe they do that. I don't see them making any type of drastic big move where they have to give up, you know, a second or third or even a first round draft pick.
My last word on this topic for this week, because I'm sure we're going to go back to it over the next 6-7 weeks, is that you're not necessarily fixing a weakness as you are maybe improving a strength, and that could be how you think about the trade deadline. Not fixing a weakness, but improving a strength. When we come back, Mitch Peacock, the voice of the Manitoba Moose, is going to join us, talk a little bit about the Moose. You're listening to Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. Bottom of hour number one, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us via text message. Text 1290-90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website has got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Moose in action later this afternoon, home to the Iowa Wild today, and then tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock. We're pleased to welcome back to the program the voice of the Manitoba Moose, Mitch Peacock. And Mitch, before we get you talking about the Moose, first and foremost, congratulations. You're heading to Pyeongchang for the Winter Olympics. You're going to be the voice of sport, short track speed skating. Congratulations on that.
Well, thanks very much. I'm really excited about it. It's a great opportunity and always, you know, so exciting to be associated with CBC's coverage in the Olympic Games. So looking forward to it, but some games to take care of first.
Yeah, absolutely. A weekend tilt with the Iowa Wild today and tomorrow afternoon. Moose sort of having a little bit of struggles on this homestand to start. 0-1-1 in the last two games. Really, they were handled handily on Wednesday night, losing 5-1 at home. The first time we've really seen the Moose get handled that easily on home ice in a while. I guess it shouldn't be that surprising given the litany of regulars who are currently out of the Manitoba Moose lineup.
Yeah, you know, I think that the Moose have an outstanding roster when everybody's around, and we saw what they could do when everybody was around, especially from the middle of November up to the holiday break, where they went 16 in a row with a point, won 9 straight at one time. You know, it's an exceptional team when everybody's around. But the American Hockey League, and the purpose is for developing players and having players ready for the big team. And, of course, occasionally you get hit with injuries as well. And I suppose if you're an American League team, what you hope for is you don't get hit with both at the same time. But that's what's happened to the Manitoba Moose with Jack Roslovic and Ben Lemieux up, and now Michael Hutchinson's gone up. Their most minute-munching defenseman, the All-Star Cameron Schilling, is out. J.C. Lapointe's been banged up and out for a week or so. So it's not the same group right now. Now, that's not to say anything disrespectful about the group that's around. There's a lot of talent and a lot of experience still, very much so, in that lineup. But they're adjusting to what they have now and adjusting to new combinations, particularly up front. There's still a lot of depth around on defense and, of course, quality and goal. But when you're adjusting and getting used to playing with new players and some elements of your game aren't necessarily around, like the speed, I think, of the team has changed. Well, then, it's a difficult time for the team, but they're looking forward to the challenge. The guys that are in that dressing room right now are not interested in excuses and not interested in talking about who's not there. They want to take responsibility and find success, so they'll be very motivated for these games this weekend.
You know, Mitch, you just mentioned goal and kind of a last-minute surprise before the Jets game last night with Michael Hutchinson recalled because Steve Mason wasn't able to back up Connor Hellebuck. I guess we assume Eric Comrie is going to go in net today versus Iowa. And I guess, did Jamie Phillips have enough time to get himself into town?
Well, it's amazing what these guys do sometimes, the planes, trains, and automobiles, to get from A to B and to be available to be into the lineup. But I don't think there's any doubt about it that Eric Carmen will play today, and I wouldn't be surprised if he plays both games this weekend. And it's not a bad thing because, as you know, Eric hasn't played a lot in the last little while, having gone up to the Jets for a stretch and then suffered an injury for a period of time. So he hasn't played a lot of goal, and I think the last time he started two games in a row would have been going all the way back to the early part of November. So he'll look forward to two straight coming off of Wednesday and maybe three straight, depending on what happens tomorrow. But we saw, last Saturday in Iowa, Jimmy Lodge got the call, and he was on a 6 o'clock flight from Jacksonville to Charlotte, and then Charlotte on over to Des Moines. He came in, had lunch with the guys, took a nap, and he was on the ice that night. So it's pretty incredible what these guys do to be available to their team.
You know, Mitch, one word Coach Vincent's been using with me a lot is entitlement, and trying to get away from the guys having an attitude of, you want them to be confident that they're going to win, but not entitled to a win. How do you think the coach and the coaching staff in general has tried to offset that slipping into the game, especially with how much success the team has had at the midway point of the season?
Well, I guess a couple of things, Dave. Firstly, I think that the entitlement issue was probably a bit more of a concern when the team very first came out of the break, because they had all hands on deck and it was very much the group that had taken them to the 16 points in a row. And then things slipped a little bit. And they also felt that even that it was starting to slip coming off of the Toronto series before the break. So the entitlement issue, I believe, was more of an issue when everybody was around. Since then, I think the bigger issue is a change in the speed of the team, because of the players who aren't available to them. But to your question about entitlement, I think that this is an issue that Pascal Vincent has actually addressed in some ways right from the start of the season, not based on success, obviously, because they were coming off a season where they won 29 times. But what he's talked a lot about since the beginning of the year with this team is that essentially that ego is something to be wary of, that if you get too caught up in yourself, too caught up in your own agenda, too caught up in how good you are, too caught up in what you deserve and what you think you should have, you're forgetting about the bigger picture, which is growth and development on a personal level and contributing to the team. So I think that actually their management of their mindset is something that they've been concentrated on since day one and is an important part of their success. Now, what happens, of course, is once that success actually takes place, you're in a different space where you're dealing with something now where your goals and your dreams are happening, and then what? So there is certainly an adjustment to that. I'm not saying there isn't, but I think that challenge of dealing with entitlement has actually been pushed aside a little bit by the way the lineup has been changed. But it's a unique thing, and it's a critical part of the game. Ask any player, and they'll tell you that confidence is so important. Well, what does that mean? And it really means having your head in the right place. And that's been a priority for the coaching staff since the beginning of the year.
Mitch Peacock is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Manitoba Moose. They're in action today and tomorrow. 2 o'clock puck drops both days. You can hear the game with Mitch Peacock on moosehockey.com. And our very own Dave Minuk next to Mitch in the booth on color, apparently. Mitch, do you get hazard pay when you do the games with Dave? How does that work?
I don't need hazard pay. No, we're in good shape. Looking forward to the weekend. Be nice.
I can't be nice. That wouldn't be our MO.
And Mitch, Drew's going to be at the game with his family, so that guarantees the Moose a win.
Oh, is that how it works?
Oh, okay. Well, that's a good added element.
Yes, my 2-year-old daughter is obsessed with Mickey Moose, so we're going to go up close and personal.
Well, Drew, you're obsessed with Mickey Moose, too.
That, too. Yeah, so
she gets it honestly.
Yeah, so she comes by it honestly, is right. Mitch, from your perspective, you watch the Moose more than anybody. who is the biggest threat to the Moose in the Western Conference? Which, you know, is there a team that maybe is a little bit under the radar that you think maybe matches up well against the Moose as we get, you know, more and more into the important games? I know it's still, you know, a few months away, obviously, from the playoffs. But do you see a team that matches up really well against the Moose?
Well, you know what? I think that team might have just been here. The Grand Rapids Griffins are a team that won a championship last year, that are loaded with experienced players, that can score, that have some depth on defense, that have a goaltending tandem that's been around and experienced a title drive. They're very well coached. And I think that's a giant that was sleeping early on in the year, or maybe dealing with a hangover more accurately. But they came in and really looked like a quality team. They play fast, they play together, their special teams are deadly. So they're certainly a team to be reckoned with at Grand Rapids. Also, you know, and it's maybe a little bit apparent given the success they've had recently with 14 games in a row with a point, but the Chicago Wolves are a very good team. I was talking with a number of the Moose players when the Moose were on their hot streak, and I was saying to them after they had the success in Toronto, you know, four or five guys I talked to just specifically about this topic. I said, who's the best team you've seen so far? And a lot of the guys, the first thing they said was Toronto because of their skating and their speed. But a number of the players said the Chicago Wolves. And I thought it was interesting at the time because the Moose had beaten Chicago on a couple of occasions pretty easily. And Chicago wasn't anything special. In fact, in November, they had gone eight straight without winning a game. And it caught me a little bit off guard. But they said there's just too many good players there for that team to be a poor team for very long. So there are a couple of really good teams right in this central division. And that's not even talking about a strong Milwaukee team. A very young Rockford team that seems to be scrappy and hanging in there. You look at the standings in that central division, and with the exception of Cleveland, it's just jam-packed in behind the Moose. And those teams aren't slowing down. They're coming you know, pretty quickly in the rearview mirror. So there's some really good teams there, and it's going to be a very interesting second half.
You know, Mitch, we talked about the 2018 Winter Olympics earlier, and I know you were tuning in to the Team Canada, Hockey Canada men's Olympic team roster announcement. What was your reaction to the former members of the Manitoba Moose making the team? Of course, Quinton Howden, Mason Raymond, and former St. John's ice cap Eric O'Dell.
Well, you know what? I love these stories. I've always been a guy who roots for the underdog, and I know that there are so many good stories in that group, players who are very talented, who've made great sacrifices, who've put in so much time and effort to get the most out of their games and to feel a pride about what they've done in this sport. And so for guys like that to get the chance to do something like this, I think is fantastic. And as much as that, you know, I love the best on best like everybody else, I'm very satisfied with this as well because of that. I'm happy to see these types of players, some of them who, you know, have toiled and somewhat you know, anonymously down the years, getting a chance to be in the spotlight to represent their country. And, you know, I got to know Quinton Howden last year when he was with the Moose and have nothing but respect for him. This is a guy who's just a dedicated professional. He loves the game. He gives everything he has. He's dealt with some of the weight of expectation over the years being a first round draft pick. And, it's just a good, honest guy. And it's nice to see that happen for him. Eric O'Dell, I know a little bit from his time here too. And he's one of those players, you know, so often we hear about it. In the hockey business, they call them 4 A's, you know, where a AAA player is a good American League player, and then you think the next level from there is an NHL player. But there's some of those guys that are caught in between, where they're almost too good for the American League, but they can't quite find a place in the National League. And Eric O'Dell seemed to be a bit of a 4A, in my opinion. And so, you know, here's a guy who's been on that cusp and wondered, why not? Why haven't I been able to sneak in there? And so terrific to see him get that chance. And you know, Mason Raymond, I don't know, but it's an interesting story because I know he got a toe in the door in pro hockey through the Moose. And boy, we've heard that story before. And I understand from that announcement from the Team Canada people that he was a guy that was so eager to make that team that he was almost too uptight in some of the tournament games they played. And they were concerned. He was concerned. He wouldn't be able to put his best foot forward because he was so nervous about trying to do this. And that says a lot about these guys and what they care about and what this means to them at their stage of their careers.
You know, Mitch, there's a number of players we could talk about on the Moose, obviously, and we do constantly. But one player I really think deserves highlighting right now is Buddy Robinson. I think his play, you know, night in, night out, he brings energy. We saw him get into a rare fight on Wednesday night, and that was kind of unusual. Scored a goal as well. He didn't get the assist for the Gordie Howe hat trick, of course. But you know, he's hitting career totals. He's matched his goal total, which in almost half the games he's traditionally played, which is, you know, obviously 75-76. And his points totals, I believe he's one off his career high. What do you think it is about Buddy this season that's really just elevated his game and taken it to the next level?
You know, that's an interesting question. I'd have to know a lot more about what he's done before to get a sense of what might be different now. But I would say that I'm very impressed by his maturity, his professionalism, his dedication, his comfort level. And he's got that sunny disposition. You know, Buddy always seems to have a smile. He always seems to find the good in a conversation. He always seems to be able to start each day like it's a new day. I think that's really important in a long, grueling season. And I think that there's a comfort level for him here. He knew Derek Kramer, having played with him in the Ottawa organization before, which is a big entry to that locker room, because Derek Kramer is, Francis Beauvillier called him, is almost the father to the team. So, you know, that's a big thing to have a comfort level when you come over to a group. And I think there's also been a great bond between Buddy and Patrice Cormier. And, of course, Patrice is the captain. And you see those guys go to work so many times in the penalty kill. They not only want to turn the puck over, get the puck from the other team, but they look at each other right away like, should we go for it here? And we've seen what they can do shorthanded. That's such an inspiration to the team. So, you know, Buddy Robinson, it's an unfortunate cliche, but he is a professional. And that's the great thing about having a player like that around a young team like this, is he can come in and rub off on all the other guys about how to go about his business. And then he can go out on the ice and show it. He doesn't need to, you know, he doesn't have to worry about just talking a good game or maybe trying to be a bit of a mentor and then not being able to hold up his end of the bargain. He is performing on a regular basis, and that's just a great addition to the team. One of the important additions to this team that helps them to be better than last year.
And tomorrow, of course, is the big polar bear. You know, we've got the Iowa Wild today, Iowa Wild tomorrow, but tomorrow they'll be playing against a team wearing polar bear uniforms, right, Mitch?
Yeah, and I always like it. I don't know what it is about the change in jerseys, but to me it just, you know, in a long season where some things seem to look the same night in and night out, it means a lot to have that little bit of variety in there. I think the fans appreciate it too, and the jerseys this year are unique again. It's not the same polar bear jersey every year. This one looks a little bit different. I think it's a more of a traditional look this year with a kind of a cream color as the foundation to it, and so fun, you know, fun for the fans, fun for the players. And I think a really important cause as well, in support of the Polar Bear Rescue Team. And I know it means a lot to the organization. And every year they bring it home with a visit to the Assiniboine Park Zoo. They were out there just recently. And it's neat to see the players, you know, take a concept and see what it actually means when they get out to the zoo and see what's being done there.
The Moose in action this afternoon at 2 and tomorrow afternoon at 2. Both games at Bell MTS Place and available at moosehockey.com. Mitch Peacock is the voice of the Manitoba Moose. Mitch, thanks for doing this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. Take care.
Our pleasure, Mitch. We'll do it again real soon. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Jets and the Minnesota Wild. They are in action tonight in St. Paul. That's up next. You're listening to Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN 1290.
See if things get feisty early. Here they score!
Nino Niederreiter scoring for the Minnesota Wild. He won't be doing that tonight against the Winnipeg Jets. He's out of the lineup with a lower body injury, but the Minnesota Wild and the Jets will still do battle tonight in St. Paul, the final game for the Jets before they begin their mandated five-day player break. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. That's Keener Jerseys, KeenerJerseys.com.
Very pumped to get my Team Canada Quinton Howden jersey.
Yeah. Are you going to buy the new version of the Team Canada jersey?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's a great story. you know, Quinton Howden is a guy who played a little bit, you know, for the Jets, spent the most of the season with the Moose last year, Dave, and, you know, Mike McIntyre caught up with him, and he was absolutely elated. So I realize that there are some hockey fans that aren't going to tune in to the Winter Olympics, but I'm still going to, because I want to watch it every time, you know, you see Team Canada going for gold. So, you know, as Mitch mentioned last segment, you know, great stories for a lot of players who are no longer in the NHL.
We'll talk about the Winter Olympics in the second hour of today's show. For now, though, we'll talk about the Jets' opponent tonight. That's the Minnesota Wild. The Wild 23-17-4 now. With the Blackhawks' victory over the Jets last night, they have overtaken the Wild for the second wild card spot. The Wild, of course, tied with the Blackhawks, and both teams only a point behind the Dallas Stars in that battle for the wild card spots in the Western Conference. This is a Minnesota Wild team that had general manager Chuck Fletcher lamenting their inconsistency. I believe it was last week he spoke with Michael Russo of The Athletic about their inconsistent first half. But this is a Wild team that's been very good on home ice, 14-4-3 at home in St. Paul. But you really look at their numbers, and they've sort of been very average this year, which sort of reflects their position as right fighting for those wild card spots in the Western Conference.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned off the top of the segment, Drew, Nino Niederreiter isn't going to play, and you know, Nino Niederreiter, you know, he's had some goals this year, but he's not having, you know, the best season.
Yeah.
And, you know,
injury-riddled season.
Really. Yeah, and he's missed some games, too. But, you know, it's unfortunate. You know, the Wild had a lot of injuries at the beginning of the season. Zach Parise, obviously, you know, was the big one. He's back in the lineup. I believe he's played five games now, still looking for his first goal. But, you know, this Wild team, I think, you know, they've taken a little bit of a step back this year. But as you mentioned, they're right there with the Blackhawks, you know, battling for those wild cards spots, and that was a big win for the Wild over the Blackhawks
Wednesday
the other night.
Yeah,
because the Blackhawks had been playing some pretty good hockey, and you know, nice to see Eric Staal, by the way, get the All-Star nod, you know, at his tender age. And this is still a very dangerous team, and as you mentioned, Drew, you know, they've been one of the best teams in the Central Division at home. Obviously not as good as the Jets, but a lot of dangerous weapons on this team. Dave, Mikael Granlund, Jason Zucker, you know, Ryan Suter's quietly having a really good season. You expect him to, because, you know, he's one of the top 10 defensemen in the NHL, in my opinion, even though, you know, he's getting up there in age. Mikko Koivu, obviously, you know, an excellent center. Still very deep up the middle, still a very good group of defensemen. I think, you know, they've missed Marco Scandella, and, you know, Matt Dumba, you know, had a rough start to the season, and you know, he was in Bruce Boudreau's doghouse, and he's been playing better as of late. So, you know, a lot of weapons up front. You know, they're always solid in goal. I don't know if they've announced who's going to start in goal, but you know, Alex Stalock, the Jets have already seen him once this year. You know, the Jets have had success against the Wild, but still a deep team, and still right in the thick of things.
I think, to me, the thing that stands out is goal differential. Right now, it's at zero for the Minnesota Wild. And I think more to that point is the fact that their goals against is the fourth worst in the Western Conference right now. So, to me, that's an unusual stat when you look think about this Minnesota Wild team. This is a team we generally think of as a defensive-first crew. Their goal scoring, which is, again, the same as their goals against, is at 127, which is ninth best in the Western Conference. So it's a little unusual in that regard that we're not used to seeing from this Minnesota Wild team as a team that has given up as many goals as they have this season. So to me, that's kind of what stands out. And, you know, the Jets have had their number. The Jets have beaten them three times already this season. So from Winnipeg's perspective, that's a good thing. They haven't
Stalock, actually, Dave, sorry to interrupt you. No. He's been in net for two of the games, both losses.
Oh, okay, yeah. So they lost twice in October, once in November. I mean, the Jets have had their number, and it's kind of like what, you know, they did with Chicago last year, where they seem to always be able to beat them. So, and that's important, obviously, when you're playing a Central Division rival, is that you want to be able to have their number. So if the Jets can somehow, and the Jets need this win, because again, we talk about how well positioned they are, but at the same time, a couple of losses before a 5-day break is not going to sit well with this Winnipeg Jets organization and these players specifically. So at the same time, you can say, yes, we have a cushion. We're comfortably right now in second in the Western Conference, but how comfortable? It's only 3 points up on Nashville, who have three games on hand on you. And, you know, okay, fine. Minnesota, St. Louis is well behind them a little bit because they've played one more game. But like I said, to me, these are the critical games. This is a game where you need to have a bit of a bounce back. Again, I didn't think they played horribly in Chicago. They could have won the game, but you didn't. And at the end of the day, you need to finish off this little break pre-game. this game before the break strong. So I think the Jets really need to come out well against Minnesota.
Sorry to go back to the goaltending, but I would expect it to be Devin Dubnyk.
Yeah, it was a very optional skate for the Wild today. So
and Dubnyk played against Chicago.
Yeah, so. There'd be no reason for it not to be Dubnyk.
Well, and also, as I mentioned, Stalock has been pretty bad against the Jets this year.
Well, and the Wild play the Canucks tomorrow. So if you're looking in a back-to-back situation, you're going to put Dubnyk against the Jets.
And they haven't played in a few days.
They haven't played since Wednesday, so it should be Dubnyk, and then Stalock will get the Canucks tomorrow, presumably. Again, a very optional skate for the Minnesota Wild, and the Jets, of course, not skating today, given that they played last night in Chicago, so you won't know about any lineup changes for the Jets until closer to puck drop. You can certainly tune in to Hustler and Rick. They'll probably give that to you, or check out the website, illegalcurve.com.
Well, I was going to say, but the interesting thing with the Jets is there are a number of question marks. Now, while we don't anticipate Adam Lowry playing, Brandon Tanev, in theory, Coach Maurice earlier in the week said if he's at 95, then he could play. So you could have Brandon Tanev back in the lineup. Now, my suspicion is they probably, if he isn't 100%, why not keep him off for another week and then, really make sure he's healthy when they come back. But again, maybe he thinks he needs to win this game.
Yeah.
And he thinks that inserting Brandon Tanev on that third line or fourth line, wherever he puts him, would be important.
And then, of course, given we don't know the health status of Steve Mason, but it sounds like if you heard what Paul Maurice said post-game yesterday, it sounded like it's likely that it's going to be Connor Hellebuyck going back-to-back for the Jets. Which I guess makes sense. He wasn't tremendously tested last night, and, you had a week off after this, so there's no, the fatigue factor shouldn't be overwhelming.
Yeah, and to Dave's point, the Wild have won three of their last six games. They got shelled by the Colorado Avalanche 7-2 last weekend. It's just been, they're a 500 team right now. I don't know if they're exactly 500, but they're around 500, and, that's why they're, teetering, on the edge.
Slightly over 500, but close enough.
Yeah, and, that's kind of been the story of the season. They haven't had any extended winning streaks, to my knowledge, and, Dave talks about the defense. You just don't expect a team like the Wild to ever let in seven goals. And, Dubnyk, I think, has started to play some better hockey. And, he's a Vezina candidate, not this year, but in previous years. So, he's starting to, play like the guy who has been one of the top goalies the last couple of years. So I wouldn't expect this one to be a high-scoring game. I think it'll probably be another 2-1, 3-2 type of game.
And everybody's attention in Minnesota is squarely, of course, on tomorrow afternoon as the Vikings will play the Saints. But before that, the Jets and the Wild will do battle tonight in St. Paul. Mike Greenlay is the Minnesota Wild color analyst on their TV broadcast. He joins us next for more discussion about the Jets' opponent. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN 1290. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. Confirmation from St. Paul, Devin Dubnyk will be in goal for the Minnesota Wild tonight against the Winnipeg Jets.
I told you, Drew.
Yeah. Way to go out on a limb there, as way to call your shot there with that fortune teller of yours there. Anyways, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program a good friend of ours, Mike Greenlay. Mike is the Minnesota Wild color analyst on their TV broadcast on Fox Sports North. Mike, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well, Mike. How about yourself?
Terrific.
That's good, Mike.
We're cold, Mike.
Yeah, we're cold here, and I'm sure you're not that warm down south there in St. Paul either.
Yeah, it's chilly down here. I can't even imagine what it's like up there. So.
Yeah.
Mike, you'd be very happy to know, though, that Drew is wearing his Vikings long sleeve shirt right now, so he's supporting
nice.
This.
I'm ready for tomorrow, Mike. I'm fearing tomorrow to no extent, but I'm ready for tomorrow.
Yeah, well, the Wild moved their game back an hour to accommodate all the Vikings fans and the Wild fans. So hopefully, they moved it for a good reason, and their people are celebrating in the streets.
That would certainly be nice, but as a Vikings fan, I've learned to expect the worst. So,
you should move here. You'd fit right in.
Oh, well, let me put it this way, Mike. When Blair Walsh lined up for that field goal against Seattle two years ago, I had no doubts whatsoever that he was missing that kick.
Oh, no.
Yeah, just like a good Vikings fan, expect the worst, be pleasantly surprised if it doesn't happen. Anyways, let's talk about the Minnesota Wild. They're playing the Jets tonight in St. Paul. Yeah, you know, Mike, this Wild team, they're in a playoff spot right now, or they guess they just fell out of a playoff spot with the Blackhawks beating the Jets last night, but they're tied with the Blackhawks nonetheless. An inconsistent first half to the season, is that a good word that you would use to describe the Wild's performance thus far?
I would say that that isn't inaccurate by any means. It's I would say that they were treading water. There's no question that the Wild had to tread water in the first half of the season. I mean, just never really able to get any kind of momentum going. Every time they would, they'd get another significant injury, or some circumstance would pop up that it just didn't allow them to gain continuity in their lineup. And when people look at especially when good players come back in the lineup, everyone thinks that, oh, well, now you got this good player coming back in the lineup, everything's going to be all right. But it just doesn't work that way. First of all, any player usually takes a game or two, and depending on how long they're out, takes a little more to just get his game in shape. He obviously, when he comes back in the lineup, he'll change the chemistry and change the lineup in as well. So I mean, there's so many things that happen when a player comes back that it's not instantaneous offense, and it's not just instant a continuity in the lineup. And the Wild just have continued to have that happen, and now Niederreiter is out until after the break here. So I think if they're able to get their lineup healthy, and if they're able to get those guys playing together for a little while where they can all find their game, then I think you'll see more of the team that you saw last year. But until that happens, it's trying to tread water in a lot of situations, and they're just looking to try and get some points in this weekend because they go on their 5-day break on Monday, and they you just mentioned it, how they were in a playoff spot and then the next day they're not. And so that's just the nature of the beast right now for them. So they want to try and pull a couple points out of this weekend against Winnipeg and Vancouver so that they don't drop too far in the 5-day break.
Mike, how has Parise looked in his 5 games back? He came back in early January. Is he getting more and more comfortable as each game comes along here?
I think he is. Boudreau was asked that question yesterday, and he said, listen, I don't want to evaluate any player until he's played 10 games. And I agree with that. I mean, 10 games is usually a pretty good benchmark for guys, especially guys that didn't go to training camp and guys that didn't play until like halfway through the season. So I think it's all the good signs are there, and now it's just a matter of having them click. But there's always that it's interesting when you look at any player and what they do well in particular. There's always that little fine line, or there's always that little nuance about their game that even if they're doing all the things that they look like they've done in the past, whatever that little X factor is to make them kind of go over the hump or over the top, that is still missing. And so he's driving the net. He's getting shots. He looks like he's skating hard. He's doing well on the forecheck. A lot of good things in his game. But there's just that probably that little bit more for whatever it is that he needs to find in his game. And I think he'll find that probably in the next 5 games. You say he's been back for 5? Well, let's evaluate him after 10. But I think things are going in the right direction. I guess that's the best way I can describe it.
You know, Mike, the Wild to this point in the season have lost 3 times already to the Jets, especially, and the last one was a 7-2 loss at the end of November. How much stock do you think the team puts in those 3 losses to Winnipeg, or is it nothing more than today's just a game against a division rival?
I think both those things come into play. Hey, Winnipeg's a terrific team. They got a lot of great elements to their game. They addressed whether it was addressed internally or whether it was addressed by making moves, they addressed areas that they needed to get better at from last season. And so they're a bona fide great team. So having said that, you still look at this as a divisional matchup, which is important. The Wild have always been hovering in that just under 500 against the division so far this season in that area. So that's something you need to be better at, and that's why their last victory against Chicago was really big for the Wild. And then the other part is that, you know, I remember when I played, you know, coaches always used to say, you know, no matter how many times you play a team during the season, try and win every season series. And I know that, sometimes a season series spreads out the entire season where you play a team four or five, six times, whatever it is. If you can win that every season series, you're going to be in pretty good shape at the end of the season. Well, the Wild are already in a tough spot in that regard. But they don't want to, you know, last year I think the Wild went 4-1 against Winnipeg. They don't necessarily want to have that flip back the other way this year. So I think it's very important just for their psyche and for a lot of reasons. The standings, obviously, with the way that the Wild are kind of on the bubble there. Also the fact that it's divisional and these two teams always seem to battle. And that 7-2 was more of an anomaly, I think, just because these two teams always seem to play one-goal hockey mm-hmm. games. So I think there's a lot of things you could let swirl around in your head, but at the end of the day, they need to win a game like this for a lot of reasons.
Mike Greenlay is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the Minnesota Wild color analyst on their TV broadcasts. The Jets into St. Paul to play the Wild tonight at 6 o'clock. Puck drop here on TSN 1290. Mike, if you look at the Corsi ratings in the NHL, the Wild are at the bottom of the league, 31st overall in terms of Corsi or in terms of possession as measured by Corsi. How much of a concern is there within the Wild organization regarding their struggles on the possession side of the game?
Well, anyway, obviously that all comes down to shot attempts, right? And, you know, if you're not putting pucks in the net, then you're not going to get those breaks. And you don't want to be a team that only scores when they earn it. You know, there's teams out there that score goals, and they seem to score goals off of people's rear ends, off of skates, off of, you know, all kinds of things. And those are the teams that put pucks at the net. And I've always said that when there's a team that is confident in their game, they will shoot the puck more because they're not afraid that they're not going to get it back. There's so many situations where teams just hang on to the puck too long because they want to wait for that great, great chance. They want to wait for that, you know, especially when it comes to things like the power play. They want to wait for that perfect setup and then see if they can use that grade A chance. Well, Some teams have the mindset where let's throw a bunch of grade B and C chances at the net and see if they create that grade A chance. I think that's a better mindset. The Wild don't have that mindset as much as they should, and I think that could be the thing that could make them a lot better because they do have a good forecheck. They have a type of players that don't mind going into the corners. Now they have to turn that into more opportunities. So hopefully that's kind of a second half goal for them, their ability to create chances out of, you know, and it's funny that you mentioned that because I was watching before last night, Winnipeg had a terrific stretch of power play goals, 6 games in a row, 9 power play goals in those 6 games, and 7 different scores. And so I went back and I looked at all those goals and I'm thinking what I'm going to see is something like the Washington Capitals and Ovechkin on, you know, with Laine scoring them all and Wheeler scoring them all. 7 different scores out of the 9 goals. And it was all just wrist shots at the net with deflections in front, all net front presence kind of situations where the goalie was screened. They weren't any tic-tac-toe type plays. So that tells you right there that, you know, it works if you do the right things, like get the puck to the net.
Now, Mike, over the years, we've asked you about Matt Dumba a lot, and he's always a defenseman that I'm excited to watch. He was drafted just a couple of spots before Jacob Trouba back in 2012. He only had 1 goal in his first 25 games, but a lot of people don't know this. He actually led all defensemen in goal scoring in December. He had 6 goals. And, you know, I don't want to ask you if, you know, this is his breakout season because, you know, I hate that term, but is this maybe the year that he's finally turning into that kind of all-around defenseman that the Wild thought they were drafting back 6 years ago?
I certainly hope so, and I think the more important part of your question there is the all-around part, because everyone knows he's skilled, everyone knows he can, you know, he can dangle, everyone knows he can shoot. The part about his game that was hurting him was trying to do too much, and, you know, once a player gets into the 200-300 game played area, he starts to learn where his limitations are on how much he can do or how much he should do. I mean, just because you can rag the puck all the way up the ice, should you do it? I mean, are you got to pick your spots better. And I think he's picking his spots better. He played a good portion of those games that you mentioned in December with Ryan Suter, and because Jarrett Spurgeon was hurt. So that kind of gave him a different perspective, I think, of, you know, when to go, when not to go, and all that type of thing. I think he learned a lot, actually, in December. And the funny thing is, and because of that, I think it's made him better now that he's on a different pairing. And his game can't be about how many goals he scores. If it is, then I think he's pressing in the wrong areas. His game needs to be about control. His game needs to be about moving the puck properly and making sure he's covering everything, and then the offensive side can have more opportunity to step up. But he's the kind of guy that I've always said he's one of those kids that has a lot of toys. You can't play with them all at once. You gotta pick what you're going to do, when you're going to do it. He's starting to do that a lot more, and that's why I think he's becoming a better defenseman.
You know, Mike, one thing we talked about previously in the show was whether the Jets would make a trade or whether they would look internally within the Manitoba Moose. A team we're going to be seeing this weekend is the Iowa Wild, obviously the Minnesota Wild's farm club. Do you think that the Wild are going to be an active trade participant, or do you think that they have options from within the farm system that they could call up if need be?
You know what? I think they have a couple of options in the farm system. I don't know how active they're going to be. They've done that in a couple of the past years that just didn't pan out. You know, it's tough because, you know, for a GM, if he doesn't make moves, he's said to be sitting on his hands. And if he does make moves, people criticize because usually moves at the deadline are expensive. So, I think that, you know, you got a guy like Luke Cunningham who was up here earlier this year when the Wild had a bunch of injuries. He's definitely an option. He's a future type player. You also have a guy that you can trust in Zach Mitchell, who was up here for a while as well this year when the Wild had injuries, and he played well. He's steady. He's not maybe your top six type player, but he's definitely a steady bottom six type forward that you can trust. So there's options down there. There's no question. So we'll see how things pan out. Keep in mind that, you know, things are kind of dependent upon where the Wild are and where their health is. That's been an issue all season long. Zach Parise's back now. If his game keeps going in the right direction, that's great. Nino Niederreiter comes back after the break. That would be another shot in the arm. And then once you start looking at your lineup and everybody's healthy, all of a sudden you don't necessarily need to make a bunch of moves. You know, you don't necessarily need to add to your depth necessarily, because I think the Wild are a pretty deep team when they're healthy. And if they're able to supplement some of their lineup with guys like Mitchell or Cunningham, players like that, then I think they're pretty good in that regard. And once that lineup is set and starts gaining some continuity with the way they play and playing together and staying healthy, then I think the Wild have a pretty deep lineup. So I think that they could surprise people in the second half just because they're a better team than what they've shown so far.
It'll be another Central Division battle between the Jets and the Wild later tonight in St. Paul. Mike Greenlay will be on the call for the color side of things on Fox Sports North. Mike, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us, and Skol Vikings.
Yeah, thanks, and take care. Stay warm up there, guys.
Take care, Mike. Thanks again. When we come back, we discuss Blake Wheeler, Hart Trophy candidate. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN 1290. Blake Wheeler, Winnipeg Jets captain, Winnipeg Jets centerman, Winnipeg Jets winger, National Hockey League Hart Trophy candidate.
Wheels can do anything.
Anything.
He'll play defense if you need.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you sure that you should be speaking on his behalf?
Absolutely.
Okay, there you go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. As we sit here on January the 13th, Blake Wheeler, I believe, is officially second in the NHL as it comes to points scored.
Tied
for second. Yes, pardon me.
There's about five guys there.
That's right. To be perfectly accurate, tied for second among with Nathan MacKinnon, Steven Stamkos, Johnny Gaudreau, Claude Giroux. They're all trailing Nikita Kucherov of the Tampa Bay Lightning. From my perspective, though, you don't hear the name Blake Wheeler talked about as a Hart Trophy candidate nearly as much as you do, well, Kucherov for sure, and Stamkos for sure, but that's because they're, you know, the first place league-leading Tampa Bay Lightning. But I'm reading articles that have Nathan MacKinnon above Blake Wheeler, and have Claude Giroux above Blake Wheeler. And all due respect to those guys who are having great years, the Winnipeg Jets, if you look at the individual performance as it pertains to the team's performance, well, the Jets are third overall in the NHL, or whatever they are right now. Blake Wheeler should be above Nathan MacKinnon and Claude Giroux, in my perspective, when it comes to the Hart Trophy conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we talked about it a little bit on Wednesday's late edition of NHL This Week, but I mean, look at Nikita Kucherov's a fantastic player. So is Nathan MacKinnon, Claude Giroux, Johnny Gaudreau. I mean, all of these guys are top forwards in the NHL. And it might have to do, you know, with the fact that Connor Hellebuck is having an excellent season. So some people actually think Hellebuck is the Jets' MVP. But guys, it doesn't really matter who you think the team's MVP is. And as far as I'm concerned, and I might be a little bit biased, but I absolutely think Wheeler is having a Hart Trophy-like season. Whether he ends up winning the Hart Trophy or not, this year he has elevated his game to, I think, stratospheric levels. And, you know, he's been a top player for the Jets since they came over from Atlanta, but this year there's something different. And, you know, he's moved over to center, and he was on a 7-game point streak entering last night's game. His point streak was obviously snapped, but he's not even playing his natural position. And I realize at times over the years he's played center, Dave, but he's never played center for an extended period of time like this. So, you know, Blake Wheeler can do it all. He can play on the power play. He can play shorthanded. He can play 5-on-5. I was obviously joking about him playing defense, but you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if he was actually an average or above average defenseman. He's that good. I mean, the things he's doing this year are absolutely incredible. You mentioned he's tied for second in the entire league in scoring right now. I think he absolutely deserves more Hart Trophy conversation outside of this city, because I think if you ask anybody in Winnipeg or in Manitoba, they're going to tell you, absolutely, Wheels should be a Hart Trophy candidate. He's having a career season, or he's on pace for a career season. He might have 85, 90 points this year. So I think more people outside of Winnipeg need to start talking about the crazy type of season Wheeler's having. Some are, but I think more need to be.
Here's Greg Wyshynski of ESPN.com from 4 days ago talking about the, you know, the awards at the halfway mark, or the quasi-halfway mark of the season, talking about the Hart Trophy. He has the leader in the clubhouse for the Hart Trophy as Nathan MacKinnon of the Colorado Avalanche, and the other two finalists as Nikita Kucherov and Alex Ovechkin. He starts his synopsis with the line, and I'm quoting here, first a caveat, you have to be in it to win it. Well, all due respect to Nathan MacKinnon, Colorado Avalanche are having a great year. Way, you know, unexpected, you know, performance for the Avs this year. They're not in a playoff spot. If you have to be in it to win it, Nathan MacKinnon can't be winning it right now.
Well, yeah, Dave, and this is all subjective.
Doesn't, I mean, by the way, sorry for 1 second, Ezzy. You know, in that, in his, you know, write-up about the Hart Trophy conversation, Greg doesn't mention the name Blake Wheeler once. I mean, that's a glaring oversight.
I agree. And as I mentioned, he's having a career year, and it's not just the point totals. It's the way he's leading this team, Dave, and he's led this team for years now. But if you've watched this team for any extended period of time, and we watched this team night in and night out, I mean, he's elevated his game to another level.
Yeah, and I think with all due respect to Greg Wyshynski, who covers the team, the, you know, the NHL in general, he maybe doesn't see so as many Jets games, and, you know, perhaps he just doesn't understand the impact that Blake Wheeler has. But I think at the end of the day, the truth is, and if you hear Blake Wheeler talk, and there's some people who talk in dressing rooms, and you know that they're not necessarily saying what they think. With Wheeler, you just don't get the impression he really cares. I think he is a team first guy. He's really taken this team and tried to. Let's be realistic. If you listen to a Blake Wheeler post game interview, and the Jets win or lose, like, he's tried to keep this team very even. He talks about a goal, and the goal isn't for him to win the Hart Trophy or for him to win the scoring race or for him to win individual awards, because at the end of the day, it's nice, and the reality is, like, you heard it when he was being asked about being nominated as an All-Star for the first time in his career, which, seems a little bit incredulous to think that Blake Wheeler is only the first time in his, career mm-hmm. that he's going to be an All-Star. But, he really does try and handle it with a certain level of not getting overly excited about the accolade that he has just received. And I think, again, at the end of the day, like, he wants to be known as a Stanley Cup champion. And that's what I think everybody in Winnipeg is concerned about. So, yes, I mean, I don't disagree with you guys. I think he deserves the merit and the recognition outside of the 204. And what's our other area code? 403 or? No, that's not 403.
807?
Yeah.
I don't know what the other area code. Yeah, do you know anybody who's got the other area code?
No, I don't. But
421.
Oh, Rory chimes in.
Producer Rory saying 421.
But I think, like, anybody. Well, now that I don't know it, I should have just said anybody within Manitoba would have saved us a little energy there. But anybody in this province.
431.
431. Oh, so I was right. I think I said 431 actually. Yeah. But anyways, the point is that I think anybody who's in this province knows what Blake Wheeler does on a night in a night out basis. And I think, like I said, I just to my mind, having been in the room with him, hearing what he has to say, I just don't think at the end of the day he's going to care.
Yeah, I agree. And if you asked Wheeler himself, he would probably say that he cares more about getting to the playoffs and winning the Stanley Cup, as Dave just mentioned, right? That's what he cares about. So, I mean, but we're having a conversation on the radio about this, and I think it's undeniable the season he's having. Again, whether he ends up being a finalist or not, this season I think he has proven that he's in the upper echelon of forwards. He's not a top 50 forward. He's not a top 30 forward. This year, he's playing like a top 5 forward, and that's incredible.
At the end of the day, while I said I don't think he cares, I think if we're talking about whether he deserves the recognition, I think there's no question about it. I mean, the way he's playing is lights out, and the fact that he made the move to center seamlessly. And again, sample size. You have to see how long Mark Scheifele's out, 6 to 8 weeks. So, I mean, it's going to be a large sample size of Blake Wheeler playing at center. So we'll see if that evens out or if he can continue his upward trajectory of play and the way he's elevated his game. But I think to not diminish what Wheeler's been able to do, Claude Giroux and Nathan MacKinnon, in my mind, are having really significant seasons for their individual teams. So I think they also deserve to be more in that conversation as well.
Both those teams are out of the playoffs.
Sure, I'm not diminishing it, but I'm simply saying that for what they've been able to do, if you look at their history, Nathan MacKinnon's on pace to obliterate his points total. And I know we're just talking, I know it's an MVP award, but my point is, like, I'm just saying from his perspective, what he's been able to do, and I think Claude Giroux as well. Sorry, Az.
That was it? As he didn't have any last words? Okay. When we come back, Michael Trakos of Post Media of the National Post, he's going to join us. We'll look around the NHL with Michael. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN 1290.